Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Laboring on this Labor Day, Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, look in my eyes. What do you see? I don't know, but it's time to hoop it up.
It's time to hoop it up indeed. Recording on a Monday afternoon, putting in some basketball related work so y'all don't have to. Hope you are enjoying your day so far. Steve, glad to have you with me. Hope you had a good weekend. Did you enjoy Payback before we get into the basketball talk?
Yes, I did. And I need you to issue a public apology before we stop recording this pod to Trish Stratus for the words that you said about her, calling her Sonics Patrick Ewing and Toronto Raptors Hakeem Olajuwon and someone called her Tree Rollins. I just want some respect put on her name.
She hooped. She hooped.
Thank you.
I do have a question that teeters on respectfully messy. So did they make the match first because the knees were still like warmed up?
All right. All right. What's on the sheet?
Nah. All right. Okay, let's get into some hoop. We actually do have some transaction news to get into before we dig into the nitty gritty of the, on the NBA side. Three signings. The Kings picking up JaVale McGee, who was recently waived and stretched from the Dallas Mavericks. The Celtics signings Fee Mikhailiuk. And the Nets taking a flyer on Harry Giles III. Of those three signings, do either of those pop for you? Anything catch your eye?
I'm intrigued probably the most with JaVale McGee in Sacramento. Maybe not just because of it being JaVale McGee, but also what does it mean for Sacramento? Mm-hmm. Like, in theory, it's a good pickup. But when you look at their center position overall, and it's something that you have mentioned in the past about, hey, what are these backup 5 minutes look like when Sabonis gets off the floor? Well, if you look at the Kings, they have Alex Lynn. They also have Nerlens Noel. They also have JaVale McGee. All three talented. All three kind of bring a similar flavor with a different twist. Mm-hmm. So it's very clear to me that Sacramento is saying, hey, whichever big it is, we need you to be able to roll. We need pick and roll defense and we need rim protection. That is the loudest thing that I am getting from their roster moves. Now, which way they go, I don't know. If I'm Nerlens Noel, I may feel some type of way, but I didn't say that out loud. But yeah. Who's going to emerge? Who's going to get the opportunity? That's going to be very fun. Which one will they go with? But all their skill sets, I think, could pop in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. The other question for me is what will they do offensively? Because that's the secondary question with the Kings and a backup big. And this is the tough part with elite talents in big positions, whether it's Jokic and Embiid, you can go down the line. They bring so many things to the table. That yes, you want this other big to do X, Y, and Z, but you were losing a lot of the top alphabets mm-hmm. off the table once you made that move. So how do you find that balance? Who's going to be able to make that impact the earliest? That's probably the one for me. Svi, I know you have Svi thoughts. I know my personnel. I won't go too deep. I'll ask you one question. Okay. Is he better than Sam Hauser?
I think he's better than Sam Hauser.
Okay. Okay, I'll let you expound on that. Harry Giles gets an opportunity, a little bit similar to like a Noah Vonleh, where he can contribute to a team. We'll see if he can hit it, but that feels more training camp adjacent for me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what are your thoughts on these moves?
I'll start with the JaVale one first. I'm kind of with you. Like, I like Sacramento targeting backup five just so they can really solidify that. But I was excited about the Nerlens signing because it was like, okay, cool. In theory, you do have someone that can roll, act as a vertical spacer. Defensively, as Sacramento is a team that plays their bigs more aggressively in pick and roll coverage, he seems to fit that. His ability to create turnovers with his active hands, athleticism, etc., seems like a natural fit. I don't think they're going to ask JaVale to do that. It does feel like JaVale is oddly like a midpoint between Alex Lynn and Nerlens Noel in a way, to where you're getting some of the vertical spacing elements from a Nerlens. It's more drop-y with JaVale like it is with Alex Lynn. And JaVale does have at least some experience in more like in a more hub-like offense, going back to his time at Golden State. Obviously, you're not going to confuse him with Sabonis. But if your mindset Sacramento, if you want to maintain some level of continuity with your backup five, I can at least see them kind of tapping into those prior years and saying, okay, there may be something that we can tap into in a way that Dallas wasn't able to. And if you can find something for him offensively in that way, and you also get the rolling for him, and he still has a little bit in the tank as a rim protector, then he may have more of a chance to solidify that backup five spot than people are giving him, you know, credit for. So I'm curious just to see like how they sort that out, but I would just keep an eye on JaVale if that's how they're thinking through it. So we'll see on that front. With Harry Giles, I'm with you. Like, I'm just glad to see him get another shot. I think what last time we saw him, he was in Portland a couple of years ago. And so we may be too far removed from him becoming like potential star or something like that. But if he can carve out a role with his ability to pass the ball, his ability to fly down the court, get easy ones in transition, if he can find a coverage defensively, like, I am intrigued. And you know, we've talked about this early in the offseason about Brooklyn trying to figure out what their backup center spot looks like. This feels like a unique opportunity for him. So I hope he is able to secure that. We'll feed Mikhail Ayuk. I am just intrigued. Like, one, can he stay healthy? That's going to be the big thing. If he is able to stay healthy, Boston adding yet another bona fide shooter helps their second unit. And I do think, like, and I was talking about this on Twitter not too long ago, and promise I'm not to go too deep in the Charlotte rabbit hole like I seem to every other pod at this point. But, like, there is at least a little something there with him as a secondary ball handler, someone that you can trust to run an occasional pick and roll or occasional handoff and just kind of maintain some of that side-to-side connectivity in the half court. And we've talked about Boston sometimes getting a little rigid in the half court. And so if you have a guy that can add spacing for whatever the hybrid units are going to be, if it's Jason Tatum plus bench or Jaylen Brown plus bench, having another guy like Speed that can also run a little bit of your offense and space for one of those guys, I think that's helpful. And then the natural question from there is, will he hold up defensively? That has been a big question mark throughout his NBA career. I got to the point where, like, I didn't mind him during the Charlotte stint of his season last year. I think he was fighting very hard. He has good positional size. No one's going to confuse him with an elite defender. But I do think if you believe in what he showcased in Charlotte in terms of where he was position-wise off the ball, his general effort on the ball, and you believe in that size, and you also believe in that within what Boston's infrastructure is, even without Marcus Smart, they still have a lot of good defenders on the roster. In theory, he has more room to survive defensively. You get more shooting, and you have an added element of playmaking or just a level of connectivity in the half court to keep things moving. And so I really feel like this is, again, like, Speed's probably going to be like ninth in their rotation. So I don't want to go too big brain about it, but this feels like the kind of signing that we can get to December. Like, wait, why did nobody sign Speed? Why did he last into late August, early September? Like, I think that kind of potential is there.
I hear you. And I have a counter.
Okay.
How does he get those minutes?
I think it's going to depend on just how much of a load they want to put on those star wings, really. Because I think even last year, they were trying to solidify who exactly was the backup three, and that's how Sam Hauser eventually started getting some of those minutes. So I do think if you are trying to lower the minutes a little bit for Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, you're going to keep them lower 30s, I suppose, during the regular season. That does open up a little bit of playing time. And, you know, if you look at the guard room, it's also not like they have the healthiest cast of folks. So if you are anticipating Malcolm Brogdon is going to miss like 8 or something next season, that's also going to open up a little bit of room for him. I think they can find the minutes, especially considering how often they shifted Jason Tatum down to the 4 and some of the smaller lineups that Boston played. I think they can find 12 to 15 for him a game. I don't think it's going to be that much of a challenge for him.
I will again ask. Sam Hauser had to do a whole lot of work to go from 6 minutes a game to 16.
He did.
So we're going to keep an eye on it. I'm going to keep an eye on it.
Worth keeping an eye indeed. But again, like, it feels like a signing that can pop. We'll see. Pop relative to what it is. Again, I don't think you shouldn't be putting money down for a random Speed 6 man of the year campaign. Like, I'm not making that case. Nobody should be making that case. Quality ninth man on a really good team. Gives you a couple of good games that I think he can do that. It seems like a nice target to make. On the W side, the Liberty and Kayla Thornton agreeing to a 2-year extension. $110,000 in year one, $112,000 in year two. Seems like solid value. And she probably could have got more on the open market considering all the gaps that she can fill. 5 points, 4 boards, and 17 minutes. The Liberty are winning her minutes by quite a bit this season. I'll toss it over to our Liberty resident. How did you feel about the extension news when it came out?
Our Liberty resident. I think it's big. I think it showcases that the Liberty are trying to build something, not just with the quote unquote super team, but also let's have some continuity with this. I don't know if people appreciate what Kayla Thornton brings to the table for this Liberty team. She's willing to do anything, and she does it every single night. And so counting stats, I don't think, tell the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
We sat on this pod and I joked, hey, the Liberty have shortened their big rotation to Stewie and Jonquel Jones. That does not work if Kayla Thornton can't defend 1 through 4. It doesn't work if that second unit isn't able to have the anchor of her defense. You know, if Benai Jelani is someone who deserves more credit, which she does, Kayla Thornton definitely deserves more credit.
Mm-hmm.
Because her ability to adjust, space the floor, defend, be consistent, I think it's a big positive. I think it speaks to what the Liberty have built overall as far as, hey, we're here. How do we find a way to win? I think that's big. And being able to keep her around is a big, big, big piece of what the Liberty are trying to build going forward.
And that was going to be the big thing I hammered on. You nailed all the on-court stuff. I don't have to rehash a lot of that. What the Liberty were at the beginning of the year versus what they were at the middle of the year versus what they are right now, it has been stark growth. And I said it on this pod. Like, they have just been the best team in the W post All-Star break. And they have a level of high-end talent that can only be matched by one other team in the league. And I think if you're trying to build this thing forward, you want to keep Stewie long-term, naturally. I would imagine they want to keep Jonquel, Benaja long-term, et cetera. Having someone like Kayla Thornton helps. One, she's just really good. Two, she helps unlock a lot of the versatility that they want to have, particularly with their smaller lineups. That's going to be very important. And with the W still operating with a hard cap, if you are projecting 2-3 years forward, if they do eventually have to make some moves somewhere, it's nice to lock her in right now. So that's at least one piece. If we need to make a big trade, or we see some, we have an opportunity to sign someone or make another deal to extend this core, we at least have Kayla locked in. And so that at least gives New York a level of security there. But just on balance, very good player, very versatile player. He's been important to what the Liberty do on both ends of the floor. I already mentioned the defense, the rebounding, her ability to fly around. Her passing ability goes a little underrated. The cutting ability with New York moving the ball as well as they do. Her screening. She just does whatever is asked of her. And that is quality work from the New York Liberty. Let's move to the FIBA World Cup. Let's start with some Team USA talk. 1-1 over the weekend. We're able to get a tough 85-73 victory over Montenegro. That game was closer than a 12-point deficit, in my opinion. And then we got a loss to Lithuania. 110-104, which some could argue that game wasn't as close as the deficit was. Steve, was there any surprise with the Lithuania loss? Or actually, before we get to Lithuania, what were your general takeaways from the Montenegro game? And then we can flow into the Lithuania one.
I'll give you both. There shouldn't be any surprises if you listen to this podcast. I kind of laid this all out for y'all over and over and over and over again.
It's true.
These were going to be interesting tests for Team USA. They got past Montenegro, who had the experience, had the size, had physicality, showed a lot of good help in the paint, slowed the tempo down. Went to the post. I think there was a graphic in that game, the fourth quarter, mentioning that Montenegro had zero, absolutely zero fast break points. That was their game plan. Now, that was a little closer to what Team USA had experienced before in some of those tougher games, whether it was the hot start from New Zealand or what Greece presented or Germany and Spain in the buildup. They were able to respond, find their way. And again, once a team that kind of decides, hey, we're going to slow everything down, if you have to now scale up offensively, things change and you're in a tough spot. So that to me felt like the story of that game. Lithuania was a very different test, very interesting test, because they had size, they had experience, they had execution. They also had pace and timing, and they hit a whole lot of buttons that Team USA has to figure out. They tapped a lot of the things that Team USA struggles with in a very, very tough way. Like, Team USA has done a very good job of coming together very quickly. Still a small margin for error with this team. And if you go back to that Lithuania Team USA game, it felt like they had opportunities to set the tone. It didn't feel like they nailed them. What was it? Anthony Edwards had 2 pull-ups in the first 45 seconds of the game, so he was locked in, ready to go. It felt like they missed some chances in transition early when they did get stops to be able to give themselves a gap or some breathing room. Jaren Jackson Jr. gets in foul trouble. I think that put them in a tough spot where they had to go smaller earlier, and now the defense is kind of disrupted. The offense is a little disrupted. They just felt disrupted on both ends of the floor.
Yeah.
But I don't take anything away from Lithuania and their game plan early on in that one. Again, we've mentioned it before, the trade-off for Team USA to turn down some of the activity, some of the ball pressure, some of the reliance on forcing turnovers to generate offense, you're going to allow a team to be comfortable offensively. They're going to run through their sets. Lithuania was very patient, and they hurt Team USA in different ways. It was almost like a buildup, pick and roll. Okay, we see your drop. Our guards will attack that space. Our guards are willing to take the pull-up threes that a lot of teams have not hit you with. So now you have to think about that. You come up a little bit higher. We might attack the space, hit the roller, or it turns into a pop. Now Valanciunas hits a pick and pop three. Then he posts up. He draws a double. That opens up another three. So now, when you go back to that game, you notice how they hit them, and now Team USA was in rotation. Team USA has been active. They have fought. They have pressured. They have not been scrambling in rotation like they were early in that first quarter. And that's where it was like, whoa, you're getting hurt by dribble penetration, hurt with the pop, hurt with the threes. Now you're in rotation. They're just playing out of all that. And then they kept building on it because they went to more movement too. Hey, Jaren Jackson Jr., great rim protector. We're going to run elbow action. You're going to guard the ball. We're going to cut off of it. There's no size behind you. And they just kept hammering it, hammering and hammering. I thought Lithuania just did a great job keeping the pressure on. I think the one thing for Team USA offensively, they got to learn a lesson. Both in the Montenegro game and in the Lithuania game, especially Lithuania, good job of defending drives. Good job of defending pick and roll. The bodies are in early. They're showing early help, but they're not committing to the ball until it's late, which means those passing windows, those shooting windows, it's a little different. How many times, and again, it's a Team USA team full of guys that we've seen produce in pick and roll. We've seen drive and kick. How many times has it felt automatic, Nikaias?
Not as much as we see like on the NBA level. I'll put it that way.
So that's the one adjustment that Team USA has to figure out. If they're going to have so much of the pick and roll element, you got to know when the pass is there, how to get to the pass, and how to get them back scrambling. I think that was the one thing missing for Team USA. They were searching for it, but those drives, physical, contested, help is shown, but I don't have an easy kick. And then when you combine, you're not finishing, it gets pretty tough. That kind of late help has really hurt Team USA in this tournament. And I think that first half, Team USA was kind of stuck with what they wanted to do in theory, and then the deficit they were facing, and then the shots they were available to them. Like, think about it. That second unit had to face a deficit, Nikaias. And as good as they played, as well as they have contributed to this effort, it's different when now you have to get stops and score against a team that is willing, as we mentioned before, to post any and everyone up. Austin Reeves, I don't think he had a lot of fun.
He did not.
That man got an and-one, stuck his tongue out at him. Like, that's just the kind of pressure. What?
It was apparent early that Lithuania was comfortable in getting stuff. The tongue flick was where I was like, all right, man, this is a lot. This is a whole lot. And this is, you zoom out for the rest of that game, Lithuania shot, 56% from three on pretty solid volume. That's the kind of funny thing, as I was going through the actual like numbers from the games over the weekend and watching, one, Team USA just got obliterated on the boards in both games. Two, they took care of the ball relative to the other teams. I think it was 41-22 or 41-24 over those two games. Team USA took care of it. Now that also kind of blends into how much was the ball moving and the type of shots they were getting into. It's just an odd watching USA just try to figure out like the possession battle in terms of the offensive rebounds they've given up, and also just what they were or how they were trying to take care of the ball on the other end. I think the flow has just felt kind of weird for a couple of games now. They were eventually able to find it against Montenegro. They found it more so in the second half against Lithuania, but even then, like, it didn't feel great in that one. And to your point about the early help and pick and roll and some of those windows being different, I wonder, and I guess I'll pose it to you, like, how concerned are you about that with Team USA moving forward? Because for me, it also kind of blends into a general, like, processing speed thing that I've been kind of sorting through with Team USA. And we kind of talked about it through the Brandon Ingram lens on the last pod and about the need to make quick decisions on the ball. And so do you worry at all about them figuring out that portion of it?
No, because I point to the second half. It's just consistently doing it. It's just a different window. That's all it is. You saw in the second half, Team USA driving, engaging pick and roll, a late dump off. So it's there. These guys know the reads. They know it's there. It's just different. You don't have five or six actions that you've run to where you've explored the entire defense. You might get one or two. And in those one or two, now you have to make the perfect read. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Anthony Edwards, who I know has missed passes, but in that specific game, that man was ready to go. He wanted to shoot and take that thing over. But it's trying to condense what you may normally see with the fact that it's not an automatic reaction. We can talk a lot about the NBA and pick and roll defense, but generally, if you run an action, you know the defense is going to do A, B, or C. And you know, based on A, B, or C, that's going to open up D or E. And you can kind of play out of it that way, even if the team makes it difficult. In your head, you can generally go with that. Here, I think they're in a drop, but now they're kind of showing out hard. And so, but now when I turn the corner, my man's like on my hip and there's two people over here and the skip is kind of there. But to get it there, I take one more dribble. And by the time I get there, that pass isn't there anymore. That was the funkiness of the first half for me. The second half, I think they figured it out. The biggest thing for me was Team USA. Clearly, this team has to be able to make the shots to make a team blink defensively. Team USA was not able to do that in the first half. But once they started doing that in the second half, you felt it. You saw Lithuania being like, okay, wait a minute. They didn't necessarily change their coverage, but it felt different.
Mm-hmm.
When they were able to throw the ball to Jaren Jackson Jr. in the post. And now Lithuania is showing help and showing doubles, and they're playing out of that. It's just which button can Team USA hit to get a team to react to now they get into their flow? Because it looked a lot better. Just off, I think you go back to that third quarter, that's what the set they wanted to run. They played right out of that. Just because the rotations were there, we see the read, we play out of it, it's easy. Too often they're up in an uphill climb, especially when their defense is getting hit in the half court. But they need that experience if they want to win this tournament.
I think on the defense front, do you think they ramp up the activity moving forward? Like, I've seen some, like, you know, reading my timeline and stuff, like, they didn't try Jaren plus another big out there to have him in more of a roamer role. Like, I doubt that that change happens just because Jaren did get in foul trouble. They got more Walker Kessler in that game, and it wasn't a great effort for Walker Kessler. Not super his fault, but, like, I don't know if we see that. Do you think they make any kind of tweaks to the defensive scheme, or is it just going to be press the do better button?
It's more do better for me because they can ramp up the activity, but again, they're not building the boat around it. And I think with Lithuania, it was a tough thing because how are you speeding them up? I think with Montenegro, Jordan, some of those teams, you could see Team USA starting to speed them up. You could see the activity having a hold on it. Did it really take anything away from Lithuania? Even when they navigated screens well, the ball kept moving. And especially if we're talking about Italy, that ball's going to move. Those bodies are going to move. You need to have an activity that can bother it, but you also need to have that base to handle some of those screening actions, some of that movement. So I don't know if they're going to tap that button all the way.
Mm-hmm.
That was my concern with Lithuania. I thought they presented a very unique challenge for this team because we can do all of those things. And we're not sure. And so that's where I'm like projecting in my head. Okay, you face Italy. There's movement. They have size. They have length. It's not quite as heavy on the post-ups, in my opinion. I could be wrong. How do you respond? Which one's more important? If you're scoring, you probably have more room for error defensively. If you're getting stops, you probably got more room for error offensively. What are they going to do? Because if Team USA can drive the basketball, they look a lot better. When they play with movement and purpose, they look a lot better. when they're pressuring the ball and disrupting, and the one thing they did in that Lithuania game, hey, we're going to switch. We're going to throw all this off. There's no coverage, switch. We're going to handle it. Now, that they got in trouble in the fourth quarter because foul, 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 yeah. foul, bonus. And then Lithuania was like, sweet, we'll just throw it down there.
Y'all have fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of those things. Back and forth.
I guess moving forward, good points on the defense. I just, Jaren's been important this entire run. Everything felt so different when he got in that early foul trouble. Because he serves as, one, just the best rim protector on the team. But on top of that, the amount of things that he can do offensively, and even when he isn't directly involved, like, you can trust him in a space as a spacer in a way that, one, you just can't with Walker. And even with Bobby Portis, like, I don't think teams trust, you know, teams are afraid of Bobby in the way they may be of Jaren. It's because Jaren also has the ability to drive on top of that and being able to play out of that. It's very basic, duh analysis. Team USA needs Jaren to stay on the floor. In the Italy game, if they get past the Italy game and get to the finals, like, they, he has to be out. Because I do think there is just a general, how do I want to phrase it? A general lack of reliable size in this tournament compared, you know, compared to what Team USA normally has. And Jaren is just kind of at the foundation of what they want to do on both ends.
Jaren Jackson Jr. is a very good defensive player. For him to take the next leap or go to the next level, he has to clean the fouls up. He's just going to have to. And I understand that part of it is his aggression and his mindset and the activity. You have to take the good and the bad. But he has to understand how important of a role he plays, like, not just for this team, but in Memphis. Mm-hmm. And know, okay, I can't risk that one. I can't put myself in that position to pick up that foul and find that balance so that way he can stay on the floor longer and have more of an impact. Because it was different, even, you know, before the fouls, the attacks on Jaren were different than the attacks on Walker Kessler. And it shouldn't be a position where I'm thinking, hey, did Bobby Portis do the best job in drop of all their bigs?
Oh, boy. Well, I feel like the fact that that's a question kind of speaks to to where we're at.
I'm just saying. What say you? What other thoughts did you have?
I think for me, it's more like you made it within the pick and roll lens. But for me, it's more so just how quickly are they processing things offensively, especially in light of the kind of help that they're seeing. And that's just kind of been where I've been at with the guards in general. I guess the non-Tyrese guards, rather. Because it hits different when Jalen Brunson is just in a flow and in a rhythm and can immediately get downhill or immediately make the skip or immediately go into a jumper. It's a little bit different when he does that. Anthony Edwards, who did he end up setting the Team USA World Cup record? Or he came very close to it. I think the record was 38. He finished with 35. He had it. And it felt like he was the only one that could score at a certain point once we got into that second half. But I also just look at, like, how quick some of the shots were coming. Like, it's just little process stuff with Anthony Edwards that this isn't the first time we talked about this. So it's like monitoring that. And, like, what role does he play in some of the lack of flow with the starters offensively? He's really good, and it's very clear that he is the guy. And to the point that you've made, you have to live with some of these to get the really good stuff from Anthony Edwards. But it does feel different when he's being uber aggressive and he may not have it to a certain level and everyone else also doesn't have it. So then it's just like, okay, what exactly is the offense right now? If you are leading the dance and these are some quick shots or some tough shots and nobody else is in rhythm. Not his fault, to be clear, but it's like finding that balance is something that I've kind of kept my eye on and something I'm going to keep my eye on in this Italy matchup coming up as well. But beyond that, it's that, it's the general size. The shooting was just stark for Team USA in this one. Like, I don't think they anticipated being shot the way that they were against Lithuania. I don't know if you could bank on that moving forward. But all that stuff kind of works together. There was just a general lack of rhythm missing. And Lithuania had all of it, at least in that first quarter. What was it, 31-12 after one? And Team USA won the rest of it, if you care about that kind of thing, if you care about quarter analysis. But they can't get dinged the way that they were dinged in that Lithuania game. So I'm excited to see what Italy matchup's going to look like. As you said, a lot of ball movement for Italy. It's not the same size element, so this should be a more natural matchup for Jaren. There should be a higher probability of him staying on the floor. Team USA's base should handle that a little bit better. But we shall see. Did you have any closing Team USA thoughts?
Nah, I'm cool. What you got?
Okay. We can go north of the border with Team Canada, who also went 1-1 over the weekend. A surprising loss to Brazil, 69-65, in which Canada converted 39% of their twos and under 30% of their threes in that one. I think all of the question marks that we may have had about Canada with the half-court offense, with the shooting, that all kind of came into fruition against Brazil in that first game. And then they had the big comeback win over Spain to punch their Olympic ticket. An 88-85 victory. Outscored Spain 27-12 in the fourth quarter, behind overall a 30-point performance from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but he did score or assist on all 14 of Canada's final points. Some big plays on both ends of the floor for Dylan Brooks in that one. Where are you at on Team Canada right now?
I mean, Team Canada is tough. They have a lot of talent. It's just, how is it going to come together? They're in a similar boat to Team USA. When you talk about the Brazil game, you have to take a look at the type of shots they were able to generate and the tempo that they played with. There are too many times that Team Canada plays too slow, in my opinion, where there's 10 to 12 seconds of movement that really isn't having an impact, and then you get to the heart of your action. And that becomes tough when you are not making the shots or teams are selling out on Shai, because what are you doing after that first action?
Mm-hmm.
Who else is putting pressure on the defense? And defensively, can you find a way to get stops to get your, you know, the ability to get out and run? Now, Shai is drawing a lot of attention, especially in that Spain game. You go back and look, hey, he catches two people staring at him, one person in front. Extra help is there. Pick and roll. Three people waiting for him. So the windows aren't the same for him. And then the kicks aren't the same. What's happening after the kick? Are we going right to a shot? Are we driving to get another shot? That's probably where Canada has to hit the right notes. The positive is they found a way to do it against Spain. Because they were in the same amount of trouble that they were in against Brazil. But they found a way to rally and get it done because all the stakes were on the line. Can they now improve on that and build on that? Or is this now, this is what they're going to be, to where a team can feel comfortable putting Dwight Powell and Kelly Olynyk in pick and roll. A team can be comfortable helping off of Lu Dort, RJ Barrett, Nah, Dylan Brooks, to sell out on protecting the paint and force you to make those plays and those shots. Is a team going to continue to dictate terms to Canada? Is probably what I'm looking at the most. And if they do, can Canada serve it back on the other end? That's where I'm at.
I got you. Like, the spacing is just kind of popping for me. And I was going to lob a how have you felt about RJ's run so far, because it's felt pretty up and down. And ultimately, it's similar to the Knicks thing, where it feels kind of dependent on how quick are the decisions being made for him, and is his jumper falling on his night. And when either one of those things are off, for New York or for Team Canada during this run, the offense, it becomes laborious, it feels like, for him and for the people that are sharing the floor with him, because teams are helping off of him. Also, just lowest key, is Kelly Olynyk just the best shooter on that roster? Am I missing someone? That doesn't seem ideal in light of all the talent that they still have.
Is that Kelly Olynyk slander? Let me check his age real quick.
It's not, because Kelly can shoot the leather off the thing. But it's just like, if that's kind of it, and teams are, you listed all of the perimeter guys that teams are comfortable helping off of, like, that makes life harder for Shai, who is not like he's a knockdown shooter as a spot-up guy either when he doesn't have it. And so this is what makes the upcoming Slovenia matchup very interesting to me. Well, the second reason that's interesting for me. Number one, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Luka Doncic are in the same basketball game. That is very exciting to me. But digging into the actual matchup, because Slovenia just got dinged in their last game, is this a matchup that Luka is comfortable in defensively? Like, is this a matchup that he can kind of roam around or kind of rest because of the lack of spacing that Canada has? And what does that mean for the other end?
Luka's been working defensively.
He has been. It's not necessarily about his effort. It's more so like who are the threats that he has to be super locked in on. Because then, I mean, naturally, they're not going to put him on Shea. Canada can get into the mismatch hunting bag. And so like that would change it. But like off the ball, like who is he worried about? Like if you stash him on Lou Dort. Like how hard is Luka going to have to work defensively? I guess is my general question.
I mean, I think this is a good opportunity for him to be able to find a person to help defensively, lower the energy, as you stated. I'm trying to confirm something here and make sure I'm not lying to you.
Okay.
Dylan Brooks, 53% from three, is that right?
Oof, I think 3 of 3 from three in the game against Spain, for sure, for one.
This should be easier to find, by the way.
I do think overall, like Dylan has shot well in the tournament. It might have been like the first game where he didn't have it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to answer your question. But yeah, there we go. Are you do you have any worries about Luka? Have you felt about Luka so far in this tournament, Nikias?
I have felt pretty good about him. Like I have general, he has to do a lot vibes, but that's also just the Luka package. And so like, I'm not trying to, I don't know. Like, it's not normal for him to have to carry these kind of loads. And so, like, I could have a usage question, but also, is this team going to win if he doesn't have the ball all the time? If he's not drawing all the attention that he is? And as you've stated, like, he's worked pretty darn hard defensively in this tournament so far. And so, like, I don't have any major qualms outside of that, but it also just feels like a function of what he has to do for this team to win.
I mean, here's the thing. It's very hard when Luka can take any scheme you throw at him and make it really tough for you to live with to not put the ball in Luka's hands. And I do like the way they've mixed in pick and roll and post-ups. You want to see how many times Canada feels like switching. Like, who's going to win the mismatch hunt battle between Luka and Shea? Because I'm sure eventually they will both look at each other and say, come here. Are you going to put size on Luka? Try and like just navigate things? Are you going to hope Lou Dort, Dylan Brooks can do enough bothering? I'm intrigued.
Are we going to get like an arm wrestling match between Dylan Brooks and Lou Dort to see who gets first crack at Luka?
No, I think it's just Dylan.
Ah.
I imagine quick convo. We're going to tag team this one, but I'm going to start the match.
Okay. Fair enough. So we do have the matchups locked in. On one side of the bracket, we have USA and Italy and Germany and Latvia. Should be an interesting one. And on the other side, Lithuania and Serbia should be fun. And then Canada and Slovenia. So we will see how those matchups roll out. Think that kicks off very, very, very early tomorrow morning for our side anyway. And so by this time, what, Thursday or Friday, whenever we record again, we will have some results. We'll be able to talk through those. Any closing FIFA World Cup thoughts for you?
No.
All right. Fair enough. We will then shift to the W side on the playoff hunt. As we get into this closing stretch, final week of the regular season on the W side, the Aces, the Liberty, the Sun, the Wings, and the Lynx have all clinched playoff spots. The Aces still have a slight lead over the Liberty for the top spot in the league. The Aces have two matchups against the Phoenix Mercury coming up. So barring something stark happening there, I would imagine the Aces end up with the top seed there. The Liberty have locked in a top two seed either way. The Wings, I think they're just a game away from clinching a top four seed. They would have done so on Sunday had they beat the Indiana Fever, but they were not able to do that. We'll talk about that one shortly. The Lynx clinching the playoff spot is awesome. The first team since the 2015 Los Angeles Sparks to start a season 0-6 and clinch a playoff spot. So just a remarkable turnaround in light of, one, the start, and two, the amount of games that have just been missed by some of their key players. We've seen Fee miss some games. Diamond Miller's missed some games. We've seen Dorka in and out for a little stretch there in the middle of the season. Very impressive stuff for Minnesota to turn that around. But that leaves three playoff spots for four teams. The Atlanta Dream, the Washington Mystics, Los Angeles Sparks, and the Chicago Sky are jockeying for the final three spots. Before we get into that, though, I would like to talk about the Dallas Wings very briefly, if we can. Just want to check in. Because they remain a dunker spot, what is this team candidate? Heading into the year, it's like, hey, what is the identity? How good is this team going to be? We get to the middle of the year, like, holy crap, they're the only team that's beaten the Aces, the Sun, and the Liberty. they can do some things. This is cool. The defense is working. The offense is finding some stuff. And now we get into this stretch where I think they are 4-4 over their last eight. If you zoom out post All-Star break, this has been a top three offense and the worst defense in basketball. This is a team, especially recently, that hasn't rebounded the ball well. And this is a team that has, I would say, some struggles in transition. I actually have a question to pose to you about the transition. Because I have thoughts. And
then deliver your thoughts. Don't ask me what you mean.
I'm trying to facilitate some conversation. But no, just they have some very loud lapses in terms of their transition defense. And not that they are the only team that has a player that may get upset over a call or a missed call, but it does feel like they have that kind of thing happen in very inopportune moments. And it's happening from the top down. And I think that combined with just the general, I think we've kind of talked a little bit about their pace and what is an appropriate pace for this Wings team. But you can't compound that plus spacing issues with also we're not getting back because we're upset. And now teams are getting easy buckets. And you would just like to see a Dallas team that has playoff slash dark horse title aspirations to clean up that aspect of their game. Like going back through some of the fever clips from last night and seeing people just linger after shot attempts and various Indiana Fever players just dart the floor and get easy ones because bodies just weren't matched up with. Like that feels like something that could be cleaned up relatively easily. And I think shaving some of that stuff off the margins would take the Wings from the worst defense post All-Star break to like eighth or ninth, which isn't good to be clear, but would at least put them in a better position to win considering how effective their offense has been for most of the season, honestly. I don't know. Like that's, you want to see teams getting healthier and tightening the screws before the playoffs. And it feels like Dallas is, I won't completely say going the wrong way, but it hasn't felt great for a little bit now. So those are my general Dallas wing thoughts.
Do you think the transition is something that would be cleaned up by being in the playoffs?
It could. Like, I think that higher attention to detail would help and game planning for a specific unit will help. It's going to need to be cleaned up if they have any, again, if they have any aspirations of making a deep run. Like, I don't think this is tenable for them.
Well, you don't think what's tenable?
I don't think the level of transition defense would, I guess to be more specific, like those specific lapses for them. Like you just can't have people lingering back. You can't have, I didn't get the call. I am standing underneath the basket while everyone runs. Like you can't have that as consistently as they are.
So that's the thing that holds them back from being a dark horse is bad transition defense.
I mean, bad transition defense bleeds into the overall defense being as bad as it is.
What's wrong with the defense? Did they not have a stretch where they were the first in defensive rating?
Yes. They can absolutely do it. I'm not saying they can't defend. The defense has slipped. That's all the point now.
Okay. Okay. The defense has slipped. Post All-Star break, right? They're the worst?
Yeah.
Who's first in offensive rating post All-Star break?
That would be what? The New York Liberty?
Who's second?
Second post All-Star break. I guess I could just look this up right now. I think Dallas is third, if I'm not mistaken. I think. Give me just a moment. Get these filters right now. So we got the Liberty first, the Wings are second, the Aces are third.
Who's second?
The Dallas Wings.
Who could there be a correlation there?
There could be. Would you like to expound?
Here's my thing, right?
Okay.
My issue with the Wings is pick and roll defense in the postseason. In which tempo are you going to play at? So I don't mean to take away, clip away, ask away, have a blast. I'm here to add context.
Okay.
The Wings looked really good at the start of that Fever game. But you know what the Fever were doing? Running a million miles an hour. Alf misses, makes. They were getting it and going.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the Wings were responding with?
also trying to run.
Running a million miles an hour. So you notice a shift from these possessions where, hey, we're talking, we're communicating, we're rotating in transition, we're pointing, to jogging, to, oh no, to, and I think that's a byproduct of the pressure that the Fever did and the Wings, the minutes they play and the transition. There's all sorts of things and you could go with there.
Yeah.
My larger picture with the Wings, this is a team who has defeated all the teams ahead of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that has elements that can cause problems. We have size inside. We have guard play. We have scoring. We have Satu. We can hurt you in multiple ways. We may not have all the shooting in the world. We can make it tough. I just don't know if, like, I don't think I'm going to sit here at the end of their playoff series and say transition defense ended them. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm like, where do we go with this team? And for me, I'm like, do y'all know which way you want to go with this? Do you want to be the team that runs a million miles an hour? Because offensively, clearly, they found something that really works for them.
Mm-hmm.
How much of what they found offensively has hurt what they had found defensively?
Mm-hmm.
Because as you stated, there was a stretch before this one where that defense was top tier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the balance there?
I think which blends into like the general, what is the identity? What do they want to do? Portion of the Downswings program, which has felt pretty consistent. But yeah, and like that's also why, if you remember, I guess a while ago at this point, monitoring Dallas's pace, because early in the year they were playing super fast. And then there's like an early stretch post All-Star break where they had dropped to like sixth or seventh in pace. And I was like, huh, this is interesting. It feels like they're trying to slow down. They're trying to find some kind of balance. And now, you know, with that Indiana game in particular, that the pace just ramped its way up. And so I do wonder, to bounce off what you said, like, what is the appropriate pace for this team? I don't know if they can afford to play as fast as they do in light of their pick and roll issues, specifically just who their bigs are. It's felt like they've been trying to find consistent coverages for Tierra McCown and Kalani Brown all year long. And trying to play them higher up, which is something that they flirted with last season when Tierra McCown got the starting job. Playing more aggressively, that puts a lot of strain on their back line. And this is a Dallas team that wants to apply pressure and force a bunch of turnovers, which helps juice the transition attack for them. That is a lot. And, you know, bounce off of your earlier point about the different layers that go into this. The minute workload for a lot of these players, namely Arike, who, you know, as I was clipping some of the transition stuff from yesterday, she was a part of a lot of those clips. And you look and it's, hey, she's leading the league in minutes. She has not played a game this season while logging fewer than 32 minutes in a game. Has not done it. Literally every game has been at least 32 minutes and 30 seconds for her, which is absurd as we get into games 38, 39, and 40 of the longest season in WNBA history, in addition to the on-ball load, in addition to the defensive attention that she sees, etc. And so I just... It's kind of a blend of, like, can they tighten up some of this stuff? With transit again, like some of the complaining, like that stuff can't happen. Can you tighten some stuff up there? Can you find a more consistent coverage that works for you? And zooming out, as you said, like, can you find what the appropriate pace is for you to operate on both ends of the floor? That may be easier to do in a playoff setting, but that's just another question mark for me heading into the postseason.
I got another question for you.
Okay.
What's the most difficult thing to guard in transition?
Like generally or?
Yeah.
Where are you looking for a specific like shot type? Like no, the ball in general or what do you mean?
No. If I ask you, hey, Nikias, please tell me what the toughest thing to defend in transition is, what would you say?
I would say downhill penetration.
Downhill penetration. Live ball turnovers. How many times does that hit the Dallas Wing? And where I go with this is Dallas has to play a certain way offensively to give themselves enough room for error because they don't necessarily have the shooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to play faster to give yourself a better chance and attack. That means more possessions on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
which opens you up for a lot more defensively than you could. Because I don't know if this Dallas team can walk it up, start with 15, get what they want.
I think they showcased early in the year that that's it can't be super slow.
So that's where I feel like they are going to get caught sometimes with a right and a left and an uppercut because they're trying to do one thing. And now the other consequence of your decisions comes through. Mm-hmm. That's my bail for the Wings.
That's very well done. So this is essentially the marks of just a flawed basketball team.
I mean, flawed is strong for me. It's just, yeah. it's a specific type of way to win. Right? That's the thing about certain teams. You may have an idea of what you want to do. You may know what may help you out the best. It may not be the best for your team. And you're trying to balance out, okay, how do we get exactly where we want to go? And how we balance these nights where, hey, this team has a post-up bet that's getting to Tierra McCowan. Mm-hmm. So it's not just pick and roll. So now you got Tierra McCowan struggling in pick and roll. Go back to the Fever game, Aaliyah Boston getting some post-ups. Maybe she don't get no touches. So now she's gone from here to here. How do we balance that out? Arike missed three shots in a row. On this step back, she decided, okay, I'm going to drive behind. Did we stop the ball? Are we communicating? I go back. You can watch literally the communication go from an 8 to a 7 to a 4 to a 2 to a 0. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't care who you are as a team. If no one is talking in transition, you are giving yourself a 30% chance at best. To survive.
You are getting buckets.
it's just going to be tough. You running, ain't nobody pointing, ain't nobody talking. You just run to a spot. Well, oops. All I'm saying.
Yeah, you can't do that. I guess less flawed and more, I guess to put it another way, just a team that doesn't have a super big margin for error.
No, and they
if
don't.
They don't. Yeah, and if they just don't hit it or they can't find it, it can look like the second half of that Fever game.
And don't get me wrong. Those transition mistakes were very, very, very loud. I just don't know if I take that specific game and apply that to every game. Because if they're excited about a game, I don't think we see a lot of those clips. Or if they're scoring, taking care of the ball, I don't think we see as much transition. Or if they're playing a team that's not just heck bent on throwing the ball up as fast as the Fever wanted to in that in that specific game, where I don't even know how many times I looked up and it was less than 21 on the clock and the ball was already across half court. I don't know. Because, they have an activity. Their guards work. They're active defensively. The problem is the style of play is hard to sustain. I think it ties into some of the things you talked about. So this isn't like, Nikias, you're so wrong. That's not what I'm doing here. It's hard. And I don't know if they can pick a way right now. Does that make sense?
No, it does.
They should. They probably feel better if they could. But each night, hey, we're down. We have to ramp up our defensive activity. Cool. We now need to score. How do we score? Playing fast. Cool. Okay. Oh, no, they're scoring. How do we get back to this? Ramp up our defensive activity. Play faster. You know what I mean? It's just, that's kind of, that feels like the give and take, for better or worse.
No, that makes sense. And again, I don't think it's something impossible for them to figure out within a playoff setting. And I do think there's an argument to make that, okay, we know we are playing this team. We know what our strengths are against this team. We can hammer this home and we can play this way. But again, like I guess for me, like I wish I just felt better about what their base was. And that's just been pretty consistent throughout all of this. And I think that's where I'm just like, eh.
Okay. Well, let me open it back up then.
Okay.
Power rank these bases that you trust.
Oh, no.
Wings, Lynx, Dream, Mystics.
So hold on. Wings, Lynx. You said Dream and the Mystics?
Yep.
Power rate the bases that I trust. Jeez. Well, I guess if the framing is the base, I think the Mystics are one. I just know who they are.
Okay.
probably Mystics Lynx Wings Dream.
Okay, that's fair. I was going to say, there's only five teams that have run 10 or more road games. Three of them you can name without even thinking. Mm. The other two are the 4 and 5 seeds right now, Dallas and Minnesota. So they have a game that can travel, mm-hmm. no matter what it is. And that's where it gets tricky with the Wings. Cause I wouldn't even say anything you said is wrong, but that's part of their identity.
Yeah.
We can hit these notes. Are we going to hit them every single time? No. But once we do, it's tough for you.
Mm-hmm.
How does that translate to a playoff series?
That is, Steve is leaning back in the chair with the hands up. No, that's fair. And I appreciate you for talking me off the ledge with the Wings a little bit. Because, buddy, this team has just confused me all year long. I guess that's just the undercurrent of all of this.
I mean, look, put it in a playoff setting. The scoring of Arike, the versatility of Satu, the bigs that they have with Natasha, with McCowan, the defense they can play when the activity is hitting. And I assume being in a series, knowing who you're facing, know what you want to take away may enhance that. It's there. Now, how big is that window? I don't think it's massive. I don't think it's massive, especially if they are the 4 seed and the Aces are the 1 seed. And the Aces are like, hey, that was a really great thing. Great effort y'all gave us last time. Here is zone. Bye.
Yeah, the Aces. Oh, y'all want to play fast, huh? Don't mind if we do.
So, yeah, is there a ceiling there? Absolutely. Can they be annoying? Absolutely. Like, I mean, I don't even know how much you would want to, but Crystal Dangerfield pressure the ball. Burton could pressure the ball. They have size on the interior. They can make it nasty if they want to. So, I mean, I just, you know, I'm always been a bigger picture type of person. I'm listening. And again, that transition defense in that fever game probably did not make Coach Trammell happy at all, one bit. But if I was in the coach's meeting, I'd be like, Coach, let's not do 3 minutes of transition defense. It happened. Let's move.
I got you. And I would just say, just go back to an earlier question you had. Or I guess the question that you had early on. I think the pick and roll defense is a bigger issue than their transition defense on balance. So like that.
And that was my portion of the program. Why are we sitting here talking about transition defense when pick and roll defense is right there? That's the thing that's going to hurt them more in the playoffs. We talking about all year long transition defense. Transition is easy to fix. Hey, run back and talk to each other. Boom. Let's talk pick and roll defense. But hey, I'm not going on the rant. I'm not getting big mad. It is the day of non-labor. I'm gonna just sit back.
You sure? We can talk about it. Yeah. There ain't no thing. We can get to the pick and roll bag if you want. But anyway, that concludes my Dallas Wing thoughts. As for everyone else, again, the Dream, the Mystics, the Sparks, and the Sky, jockeying for the final 3 spots right now. The Dream, they have Seattle at home. They are going to Washington to face the Mystics. And then they got Dallas at home on Sunday. The Mystics, their last 3 games, they're on the road against Phoenix. Again, that Atlanta game on Friday, at New York on Sunday, which is interesting to me because I do wonder, like, New York just kind of feels like a rest candidate to me, especially with how they've kind of slow played the Sabrina Ionescu thing. They're locked into the top 2. And if the Aces take care of business against the Mercury, which that feels like a safe bet, obviously the games have to be played. That I could see New York being like, all right, let's just, Stewie, we appreciate you. Let's just get you the nice little break before what Wednesday or Thursday when things tip off. So I keep an eye on that one for the Mystics. The Sparks are at Connecticut tomorrow, at New York on Thursday, and then at Seattle on Sunday. And then the Sky, who are currently your 9 seed, at Indiana on Tuesday. They have Minnesota at home on Friday, and then at Connecticut on Sunday.
I mean, I guess the big thing is, can Chicago win enough games, in my opinion?
Mm-hmm.
Indiana is not a fun team to play at this time of the year.
They are not.
Just with their style of play, with the talent they have. We just saw Kelsey Mitchell and Alyssa Smith do that. That's not the one you want to draw up. Minnesota's still fighting. And Connecticut is pretty good and prideful. So I just, that's where I'm like, the playoff finish is fun. But to me, it all comes down to, can Chicago keep the pressure on? Can they stay in the race? Because it feels like the Sparks, I feel bad for the Mystics, by the way. I don't want to talk about it, but I feel bad for the Mystics. Salute to them.
Yeah, that's...
Because the Sparks have a sneaky, tough schedule.
They do.
And I don't know... Well, the Liberty are the 7th, right? I don't know if... See, man, you got me thinking now.
Sorry.
Yeah, the Aces don't play again until the 8th.
Yeah, this is a big break for them. And then it's in Phoenix, and then they end at home against Phoenix again.
Yeah, so I mean, in theory, I would assume the Liberty would play that game to put maximum pressure on potential. You know what I mean? So I don't know. This might just be the order.
Ooh, that gets kind of tough. Also, I mentioned New York as a potential rest candidate. Connecticut should be a rest candidate. Like, they're not slipping from three. And Alyssa Thomas in particular has played a whole lot of minutes, man. Like, Enrique technically has the minutes per game lead right now. Alyssa Thomas is right there. And the MVP case is built on everything she's asked to do on both ends of the floor. If I'm Stephanie White, and I know we are locked into three. We're virtually locked into three. I'm just chilling with Alyssa. I am letting Olivia Nelson-Adota get some minutes. We need AT to be as healthy and as rested as possible for this playoff push. Now, granted, I am a podcaster and she is a head coach for very obvious reasons, but that's how I would, how I would go about it.
Okay. Number one, stop just saying that you're a podcaster, because there are plenty of podcasters in the world that say really bad things to the microphone. So uplift yourself, Nikias. Number two, the problem for the Connecticut Sun with the rest is they lost to the New York Liberty 89-58. Which may have just ruined a whole lot of those plans. Y'all need to get right. So you got two losses to Dallas in August. We've lost twice to the Liberty in the last four games. Hey, can we push towards a little bit of momentum and then we'll tamper down? That's my thought process. Like, I think eventually they will get to what you were saying, but we need to lock back in.
Hey, bud, we need. Hey. And the Sparks, dude. Provide an interesting test. Like, one, the Sparks are just playing super well, very quietly. I think since the beginning of August, they had the best defensive rating in basketball. So that's cool. But just the general activity that they have defensively, like, it probably would behoove Connecticut to get a little comfortable against that kind of thing and see what kind of openings they can create. See if they can get their guards in the flow in particular, because as we've seen even recently, when their guards are hitting shots, they are a different basketball team. Now, granted, I shouldn't have to say that with the matchup against the Phoenix Mercury, but when the guards are hitting shots, they're a different basketball team. So they are able to find some momentum in particular, and I think that could be pretty helpful. So you're saying that this is just going to be the order. It's just going to be Dream, Mystic, Sparks, and the Sky are outside looking in. That's where you're at, heading into this one.
It's my guess.
I got you. I'm kind of intrigued by Seattle potentially playing spoiler just by how hard they play defensively. Dream Storm on Wednesday is just going to be very interesting to me. I hope the Dream are ready to execute offensively. Because if they are not, that defensive activity plus Jewel Lloyd does not seem like a fun combination for this Atlanta team with how they've played as, like, you know, their last 5-6 games. They've gotten a nice little break here over the last couple of days. And again, they're not back until Wednesday, so they have a little bit more to go. I hope that's a reset period for them to close the season out strong and to firmly clinch a playoff spot, which, again, I feel like we just yelled at the Dream last week. Like, you zoom out, they have improved from last year, technically. And a playoff spot would be nice for them. They have nice top-end talent, so it could get interesting, but yeah, we will see. We will see. I also just want to briefly echo your sentiments. The Indiana Fever just playing really hard, just playing well. And if they hadn't have blown so many fourth quarter leads early in the season, like, they would just firmly be in the mix. Like, they just got eliminated from playoff contention a couple of days ago. And that's with all of the fourth quarter hubbub we've seen from them this year. So nice to see them still playing with pride again. Kelsey Mitchell just won player of the week last week. She's humming. Aaliyah Boston continued to expand her game. Melissa Smith looking more comfortable as she gets further away from like the injuries stretch that she had. Christy Wallace continuing to play well. It's been a really fun stretch for the Indiana Fever. Any straight W thoughts before we get into the mailbag?
No.
All righty, we can get to the mailbag. Then we have a couple. Thank you to those who sent in basketball questions. Again, you don't need a prompt from us. If you're thinking hoops and you want to ask us a question, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Let's go to Patrick, who says, "Hey, Nikias and Steve, love the podcast. Please keep up the excellent work." Thank you. Sabrina Ionescu has been stretching the floor all year with scorching hot shooting from three, but the drives and finishing at the rim have not always been there. Early in the season, she wasn't finishing at the rim and getting blocked a lot. "I'm a season ticket holder and feel like I've seen notable improvement over the course of the season, punctuated by Monday's Aces game when she had a number of tough creative finishes at the rim." So I think this email was sent in, what, a week and a half ago at this rate? "The numbers bear it out per WNBA.com. Here's the shooting splits for inside 8 feet by month this season. She's hitting a better percentage each month and not getting as many attempts blocked. So for May, she was 6 of 15 and got 2 attempts blocked. In June, she was 11 of 27, which is about 40%. 4 of those shots were blocked. In July, she was 12 of 27, which is about 44% inside of 8 feet. 6 of those attempts were blocked. I updated the stats for August. 24 of 38, which is 63.2%, and only 3 of those attempts were blocked. What are you seeing from Sabrina and the Liberty that might be helping Sabrina get to and finish these looks better? How can smaller guards get better finishing around and over rim protection? How can they use the threat of the outside shot to get into it?"
I mean, when it comes to Sabrina, it's really been her poise and her composure and her ability to read the defense. When she comes off a screen, the threat of the three-point shot is there. If the defense is not all the way to the level, she's taking that space. She's changing speeds. She's changing her pace. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing more hesitation. You're seeing more of a willingness to engage, but not out of control. It's really too fast. She's there reading the defense. Are you going to keep backpedaling? I'm setting up for my finish. Can I get all the way? Do I go to a floater? There's been more comfort with that. And I think that's one of the things you've seen, especially in the Aces matchups, with what Sabrina's done on the drive. Smaller guards, as far as getting better finishing around or over rim protection, can you initiate contact? Do you have a floater? Can you understand how to get to your spots? And you are taking the shot that you want to take, whether the defense is there or not, or are you trying to ram in there and get one up? Are you in control? Do you have balance? And if you're talking about using the threat of the outside shot, the outside shot's going to gather you the attention. What you do with that is up to you.
Well, there we go. I won't hang too far on that answer. I would just say, from my view with Sabrina, like, it does feel like she's using her body better. And I guess I go back to some of those Aces matchups where she had the Kelsey Plum matchup. And she was able to kind of shield, use her shoulder to create a little bit of space and generate some easier looks for her. I would also just generally note New York spacing in general. Like, I think she has cleaner driving lanes as New York has been better able to figure out what they want to go to and when offensively. And so when she does attack, if you want to use like the super high pick and rolls, those early draft screens that she gets, she just has more of a runway to work with. And I think that allows her to get more comfortable and get cleaner looks inside. So those are kind of the things that I've seen. Also, just a general improvement with her floater that just was not going in to begin the season. I think those shots were pretty decent quality. They just weren't going down. And that seems to have flipped over the last month or so in particular. So that, I guess that's what kind of pops for me with film. For the rest of it, Steve pretty much nailed it. So I don't, you know, not going to put my signature on that one. Next one from Marcus, or last one rather, from Marcus. "Hey guys, up at 1:30 a.m. thinking about some tweeners throughout the years in the NBA. Guys like Bagley, Markkanen, AK-47 for his time, Josh Smith, Tyreke Evans, Monte Ellis, Thad Young, etc. Curious who some of you guys' favorite, most interesting tweeners are or were, and some that might not have panned out because they didn't fit a specific mold. Steve, any favorite tweeners for you?"
Buddy, you think this is in your perfect category, considering your love for Kaziot Paula and insert wing name here? Kenrich Williams, buddy, did no. Nobody wants to hear from me on this subject. Go ahead and wrap it up, bud.
That's nasty work. I don't know what this says about me, considering who else is on the list for me, but Kenrich Williams was indeed the first name that came to mind when I read this email. So I,
what did I say?
Hey, man. Oh, Lord.
We should turn this into Can I Guess Nikias's List? Give me a current player. Give me a current player in the team. I can get one.
Go ahead. Who you think I have on this list?
No, just give me a team.
Give you a team. Atlanta.
Oh, that's Jalen Johnson.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that'll
come on, bud.
That'll do. Golden State.
Ooh, that could be a couple people. Are we still going Kuminga?
No.
Ah, the streak is over. Who is it? Who's the Warrior?
Kind of disappointed. This will be someone that's on your list.
You're going to say Draymond, aren't you?
Yeah. Look, what?
Oh, my God. That's a pump fake. That was a great ATO.
Wow.
Continue. That was a tremendous out of timeout play, Nikias. The execution on that design, A+.
Hey, man, we got you. Phoenix. This should be an easy one.
Well, now you done throw me off because, I mean, this is Utah Watanabe?
No.
Kata Bates Diop?
No.
Bol Bol?
No. I will say KBD would count as well, but like, no, see? He wasn't who on my list. No. Josh Okogie, come on, man.
What? Okay, question for you. What's he between, though?
It's the 2 and the 4 at this point.
Is that his skill set or just his size?
Yes. Because he can't shoot and they use him as a screener sometimes, but also that man can defend the heck out of guards.
All right,
he is literally, well, he ain't really a wing because we can't use him as a wing. Can't use him as a spacer. You know, I'll cut it there. What's your list? You know I can go.
Keep going. What's people came for? What you mean?
Oh, goodness. Question for you. See if I'm alone. Were you a Chuck Hayes guy?
Yes.
Okay. Chuck Hayes was cool.
I love versatility. So I have a tough time defining tweeners sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are like, are these just bigs who don't fit a spot? Are these wings who don't fit a spot? These point guards who don't fit a spot? Like, does Derek White count as a tweener?
I try to separate, like, tweener from combo guard.
See?
Because that seems to be at least, like, combo guard seems to be just a designation. Tweener feels more like we don't know where to put you exactly. And that's where I have, like, Josh Okogie, who's, like, a perimeter player, but he's not a combo guard, in my opinion.
Is Matisse Thybulle a tweener? Or is Nasir Little a tweener? Like, draw the line?
It moves a little bit. You know, it depends on your sensibilities as a basketball watcher, you know.
Is the whole Toronto Raptors roster tweeners?
Gosh. Honestly, the Raptors are probably just the answer. That's the keys. That's just kind of tough. So what is Scotty Barnes? Like, it's his, you know, 2K24 is coming out Friday. Like, it's his card, just basketball player.
It's probably a three-level defensive nightmare, something like that.
Three-level? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no.
Hey, listen. Yeah. He's some kind of point forward. Slashing point forward, maybe. We gonna figure out. Like, maybe that's what the pod should devolve into. What is Scotty Barnes' 2K card? Well, what is the designation for him?
That's gonna be our 2K contribution.
Might be. I also have 2K thoughts. We'll leave it there. I'm excited for this one. As we get off the beaten path a little bit, this seems like it's gonna be a good 2K. Very glad that we are recording our next episode. What, Thursday? We aiming for Thursday again. Because, buddy, I am off the grid Friday and Saturday. Let me tell you, I am going to be in the builder and then in my career. It's going to be cooked.
Okay. Guess we ain't working. This man just sat here on the pod and say, yo, I ain't doing nothing. Cool. All right. You got free throws? I hope you got free throws.
I do not have free throws. Do you have? You didn't give your list.
Enough.
Who are your tweeners? KJ
Martin, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Nick Batum, pick a Clipper. Pick an old person. Just say, I think they're great. It's 6-7
pick
above.
An old person. That's
too. You know, go to Basketball Reference. Find someone you think I would like. It'll make sense. It's fine. Dorian Finney-Smith. That's cool. What's that? Stanley Johnson. He's still great. What you want me to do? Trey Murphy. Does he count? Herb Jones. Wonderful talent. Laurie Markkanen. What would he? Rudy Gay. Shane Battier.
There we go.
Rashard Lewis.
Yeah.
Scottie Pippen, Clyde Drexler, Jerome Kersey, Buck Williams, Larry Nance Jr., Craig Elo.
This is so much better.
James bro. Worthy, Byron Scott, Michael Cooper.
Also, I'm glad you
Mark
said
that. Mark Aguirre. Marcus Morris.
All right, let me do the outro.
Tyshawn Taylor.
Oh, what is Tyshawn Taylor up to?
OJ Mayo.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Marc Gasol, I dare you. I dare you. Say something. Go to the outro. Go to the outro.
But I just want to hear the rationale on tweener, though.
No, I just want to hear you say something bad so I can go off.
This is like an odd setup. I don't know. I don't like this game. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community for the fun conversations we're having in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. Plenty of W hoops. We're tapping into some tennis as of late, so that's been cool. Lots of wrestling. We didn't get to watch Payback in the playback room, naturally. That's a PPV. But we do watch Raw. We do watch SmackDown. We tap into AEW sometimes. Not super frequent. Anyway, we watch a whole lot of stuff. So come hang with us. The link to the room should be hyperlinked in the podcast description. If so, just click on that link into your information. It is free. No shenanigans. And if not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free. No shenanigans. Come rock with us. It's a fun community. Lots of antics, if that's your thing, but no shenanigans, though. It's very important to note that there are no shenanigans. Anyway, with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
The answer was Thaddeus Young. Yeah.